Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
He used to cover sporting. He used to cover the Chiefs. Now he covers everything. Okay, we get it. He's the columnist for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, only on the program.
Welcome back into the program. I'm Todd Lebo in for Seren Petro today. Rolling along on this Monday, our good friend Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star joins us. He's been up at training camp today in St. Joseph. First of all, how you doing today, Sam?
Hot.
Hot.
How you?
Doing all right because it's freezing cold in the studio. The heat's finally there, right? It was a little nice last week up there, and we got that humidity and heat going. We'll see if Juju Smith-Schuster understands this is actually hot. Because last week when he said, boy, he couldn't believe how hot it was, and it was 82 degrees, I'm like, I don't think this is hot yet, son. But that is what it is. Orlando Brown Jr. is the big news today. The report came out this morning that he was going to show up to St. Joseph and kind of get after it for the Chiefs. And we heard what Andy said earlier today. He's not going to really talk about it till the fish is in the boat. But this is big news for the Chiefs to get their left tackle up in camp and being a part of this for longer than many people thought would be the case.
Yeah, and, you know, I've learned that Orlando actually is here. He might not have been at practice. I think he arrived during it or shortly afterwards, but he is here in St. Joe. So I don't know what his participation is going to be like for the rest of the week. You know, the team is mandated by the CBA to go through the acclimatization period, that if a player joins late, he actually is not required to have that same period. So technically, the Chiefs could throw him into practice tomorrow if they wanted to. Now, probably not the smart thing to do for a guy that skipped all of summer workouts. I mean, he has not played a down of competitive football, even reacting to an edge rush at full speed since the AFC Championship game. You know, he didn't even take those dry reps without pads. You know, again, at least simulating what blocking a guy and putting his body through those sorts of movements for a long, long time now. So he's got to go through, you would think, if it's not the first 5 days, at least 1 or 2 days. And of course, they're going to have to see what kind of shape he's in. I mean, I know he's been working out. I also know that working out on an NFL field under NFL umbrella is different than working out on your own. Doesn't mean it's not beneficial to work out on your own. But, you know, they've got to answer those sorts of questions before we find out what his next week or week or two is going to be like.
And what is the value of the part of him being in, quote, the best shape of his life? I know it's different than football shape, but I guess it would be easier to get in football shape if you arrived in physical shape, right?
Yeah, for sure. With Orlando Brown, I think there's even a greater benefit than maybe the average player. I mean, you look at his body, and obviously, the first thing you don't think about is, man, that guy must be in just a, you know, peak physical condition. Now, that's part of being an offensive lineman and particularly left tackle, right? I mean, you don't want those guys to be my size. So I think, yeah, there's a benefit to Orlando Brown being in great shape because I just think that all that process I just mentioned would be accelerated.
Sam McDowell's our guest. He works for
Would like to see a left tackle your size. Just no, you go wouldn't. Out there and just to see what would happen.
Not even in eight-man football. No.
It'd kind of be like Kendall Hinton playing quarterback for the Broncos. There'd be something along those lines where you tune in just to see how bad is this going to be.
It wouldn't be pretty, I don't think.
A lot of cut blocking.
Sam McDowell is our guest. He works for the Kansas City Star. He's a columnist there. Writes about anything and everything. We're talking Chiefs right now. And Sam, I think most people thought, I don't want to put thoughts in your head or words in your mouth, that Orlando maybe wasn't going to get to St. Joseph. It was maybe going to show up in Kansas City and skip this part of it. I, for one, am very happy he's going to be there because I do think it's important. I get the business side of it, right? you're going to sign your franchise tag and you're going to do what you're going to do. But I think the wrong thing would be to stay out for a long time, because I think you get behind the eight ball. This is good news for the Chiefs to get this done. But what did Orlando Brown accomplish by not showing up for the first week of this?
Well, I think he sent the same message that he would have sent with whether it was a week or a month. You know, I mean, I think the only benefit he could have gotten by sitting out the entire training camp would have been just spite. And I think that that's a short-term, benefit, and it's at the expense of the long-term. And I think Orlando Brown's message is pretty clear when he shows up. You know, I think it's indication that he's a team guy. I think it's an indication that he's ready to go. But I do wonder, you know, there still is one question in all of this, which is, how's he going to handle it throughout the season? You know, it's going to be a thing throughout the season. I mean, he's not dumb. He knows he's going to be on a contract year now. And I know that's a cliche phrase, the contract year, and there's always this assumption that everybody produces when they're on a contract year. That's not the case. Players handle that differently. You know, I'm sure you guys remember that, you know, when I talked to Tyrann Mathieu in March, he did not handle being on the last year of his contract that well. It got to him emotionally because he did not feel like the team was invested in him with the long term. Orlando Brown's a different age. But he's also made less money, and therefore I feel like it's even more important that he delivers in a contract year. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that aspect of it.
And in Tyrann's case, I guess he never really got a real contract offer, so it was a different situation. In Orlando's case, I think he got a very good contract offer from a team who he knows they need him at left tackle. He knows they gave up draft capital to get him. But in my opinion, I mean, I'm not so sure he was worth what they were offering him, because I can't find any list where people who use the data to tell you what ranking a left tackle is that shows him anywhere near the top four or five, which is where this money was. So if I was his agent, I would have said, you should sign this thing quickly, because you're going to guarantee yourself even more money than you're guaranteed this year. And even if you get hurt or whatever, you're going to get that chunk of that money. I would have probably told him to take this money because it's a great-looking contract. He has chosen to not do that and bet on himself. So you're right. That part's going to be in his head. And that's when you start thinking, I don't know, is my knee a little bit hurt? What if I, you know, all those things that are human nature, who we think they don't happen. When Tyrann Mathieu sat and talked to you down in New Orleans at a restaurant, he laid out that all those things that we assume could happen do happen for these guys. They think about these things. It's going to be hard, in my opinion, for Orlando Brown in a particular year like this, even though he's guaranteed $16.8 million. That's a lot of money, but he knows he left some other money on the table. And if you're a little bit hurt or you're not playing well, or you put a little pressure on yourself or something goes down, he may not react the right way. So I do think there's a risk in the way he's played it this way.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely a risk. Now, I will say, you know, asking to be paid in a certain position or a certain ranking within your position does not necessarily mean that you feel like that's where you do rank in that position, because, I mean, it's a league of one-upsmanship. It's constantly where one contract tops the previous one. I mean, in 3 years, Patrick Mahomes is probably going to be the seventh or eighth highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So I don't think it's unreasonable to pay Orlando Brown like he's the fourth or fifth best offensive tackle, because 3 years later, he's going to be in the middle of the pack, which is probably where Orlando Brown belongs. You know, but the other element of this that's a little bit different is Orlando Brown has only played 1 year of left tackle, one full season of left tackle. There's obviously the half a year with Baltimore, but I don't think he goes into the season just needing to prove that last year was not a fluke. I think he needs to prove that he can be even better, that he can take another step forward in order to get the contract that he's seeking.
Yeah, Sam, do you figure, is there any part of this that could be with he and his agent thinking, like, you know, it looks like the cap will go up again next year, right? And if you get this year at this guaranteed rate and you perform well enough that fourth or fifth best deal could be even more than the one he just had. Is that maybe part of the thinking when you're going about it this way?
I think it's the entire thinking. I mean, I guess I don't know what other motivation there'd be for him other than thinking he's going to have a good year, potentially better than last year. And therefore, you know, whether it's two straight consistent years, let's face it, Orlando Brown was significantly better in December than he was in September last year for the Chiefs.
Right.
And that's because it was his first time playing that position on a full-time basis, particularly in a pass-heavy system. So, yeah, I think he's betting that he's going to be even better, and therefore, you know, they're going to be paying the 2022 version of Orlando Brown, not what they saw in 2021.
No, the good news is he's going to be there. You've heard that he is there, we'll get him.
He is here.
He's going to be on the practice field at some point soon. That's good news for the Chiefs.
And yeah, he did not come up here to
sit in the tent with you
to eat an El Lazaron, if that's what you're wondering. Yeah.
No, although he should.
I would.
Yeah, he might. But I think this is just one more thing in a pretty good few days for the Chiefs. I think the Carlos Dunlap deal was important for them to add somebody. I think I really liked what I heard from Frank Clark. Now, I don't know if it's just lip service or whatever. On Saturday, I liked what I heard from him. So far, so good with basically all the news around the Chiefs at camp right now. Would you say that's, you know, we'll get about Patrick Mahomes getting stepped on a little bit today, but this has been a pretty good run for the Chiefs this first few days of this.
Well, I'm not going to say that because if all of a sudden something happens, Todd, people are going to blame me. So let's just make it clear that you're the one who's
it's on me, yes.
saying this right now.
It's on me.
You know, the edge rusher, and it was, I thought, the Chiefs' biggest concern all offseason. I was pretty vocal about that I did not think they did enough to improve the position they told us in the offseason they needed to improve most. So Carlos Dunlap, you know, I mean, he at least solves an element of that. If nothing else, he's another body to rotate with Frank Clark and a rookie on the edge. And, you know, it also confirms what we already knew going into this training camp. But, you know, there was a little bit of worry of, oh, my God, what if Frank Clark gets hurt? What if the rookie, George Karloftis, isn't that great? You know, are they going to get in a spot where they have to move Chris Jones back out there because we know he's not as good back out there? Well, now, I mean, you've got four guys that you feel like is going to be part of that rotation at defensive end to where Chris Jones is staying home. That helps the defensive line. You know, those guys are potentially going to be fresher when you get one more body in there because it's not like you're bringing in, you know, just somebody who can play. You're bringing in somebody who's competitive, who's still at the NFL level, who's going to get snaps. He's not just a fill-in guy. And you mentioned Frank Clark. He's probably the wild card in all of this. You mentioned that you liked what you heard from Frank Clark. I always like what I hear from Frank Clark.
Right.
What we see on the field is often a different story. So, you know, I think Frank Clark is a little bit misunderstood by a lot of the fans. When you talk to him as a person, he's a very likable and engaging person. And he's a guy that I think a lot of people should be rooting for. But, you know, I can certainly understand some frustration with the money he's made and comparable to the production that he's had.
And I think when I heard what he was saying on Saturday, and I made this point when I was talking to friends about this, he's someone who we just haven't gotten to talk to for 2 years, really. I mean, he's been available briefly after a couple of games and maybe on one of the pregame Zooms or something, you know.
It was on a Saturday this time.
Yeah, but like two
we
years ago.
To him a couple times in person. We talked to him a couple times in person last year. And he was great. Yeah, he was great.
Most but in like 2019, he was every other week in the room. And then like on the Fast Fridays, you go in there and talk to him. I mean, he was just someone you talked to because he was engaging and he was a part of the team. He's a personality. And I think that, you know, I miss those things because I do like talking to him. And I do think from remembering those times talking to him then, and, you know, it's just some maturity things going through because he's obviously had some stomach issues. I don't know what it all is, okay? I don't know what it is. But if he it seems to me like he's maybe figured out and understood that some of the things he was doing maybe led to some of those things. And he's not 40 years old, okay? This is still a guy. He just saw Carlos Dunlap sign an eight-year deal or $8 million thing. That money's laying around out there for guys who can put the quarterback on the ground when they're 34, 35 years old. And you don't get to do this till you're 50 years old at defensive end. You know, Tom Brady's
29 now.
He's 29 years old. This guy still has plenty of football to go. So it looks like there's some maturity there. I don't know, and I know he got asked about this, and we haven't talked about this as much, Sam, but whatever's happening out there legally in California, he said on Saturday, it's in a good spot now. It's going to be okay. Have you heard, done any reporting anywhere where you know when there's any sort of a date on anything going on with that? Because it's just kind of been out there in the wind for a while.
I actually do have that date. Not on me right now.
But is there, there is, were some, there were two there things though, right? Is
there was some sort of appearance scheduled in L.A. I believe it was supposed to be last week that got pushed back, and I don't remember the looming date on that.
So he's got an appearance, or the lawyers will make an appearance or something, but he's feeling pretty good about it. And so far, as the best we know this offseason, there were no incidents like that. So I guess that's progress as well. I mean, we all grow up at some point. I have to remember many times that, you know, some of the things that I did when I was young probably wouldn't get me in real trouble, but you know, you got to grow up sometime and figure out, hey, I got to stop doing some of these things. And perhaps Frank Clark has gotten there now. He's had a really nice NFL career with not maybe keeping himself in the best shape and doing the best things off the field. So if he gets there eventually and he can be productive for this team, that is important, because a better Frank Clark than they had last year, he said he was trash last year. They need something better than that. If you couple that with Carlos Dunlap and Chris Jones inside, and if George Karloftis can be something for this team, Karloftis, which is it's one of the dinosaurs we studied when we were kids.
He was on Sesame Street.
Yeah, the Karloftis.
Football playing.
did Todd say that earlier? That
was no,
Travis Kelce called him Karloftis.
That was Travis Kelce, not me. And I can't even remember what Trent McDuffie used to call the Chiefs defensive coordinator, but it was funny on draft night.
Spagnuolo,
I know that.
Or something, yeah, like that.
Something like that. These are hard names. They're not easy. But the Chiefs defensive line, if things go like they're looking now, should be a much better core than they had last year. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm still hesitant to say much better. I still think it's the weakness of the defense right now. Now, Cern and I talked about this last week. Todd, I don't know if you listen to Cern's show at all.
I do. I love it.
But
it's one of my favorites.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, it's one of my top three on the show, on the station.
yeah, because Briscoe's no longer.
Yeah, he did the night show now. So
the Chiefs actually got to the quarterback a lot. They just didn't bring him down very frequently. So it's kind of this odd mix. And it's unusual enough that I actually asked Chris Jones about it last week, and I said, now, the real simple answer just seems like maybe you guys don't tackle the quarterback very well. But is there anything deeper than that? He just deadpan and said, nothing deeper. That's it. We just got to tackle.
That was the last question. He looked right over at you. We got to tackle the guy, man.
And the Bengal game was really in the AFC Championship game was really a microcosm of that issue. Now, I guess you could improve your
– with him specifically.
No doubt.
Yeah. You could certainly improve your odds of getting more sacks, even if you don't improve your tackling, just by getting there more. But there does come a point where you can't get there any more than you are. You have to start taking advantage of the times when you do get there.
Absolutely. By the way, as an aside, our Chiefs beat writer, Jesse Newell, has texted me. It's September 2nd. It's the next appearance for Frank Clark.
9-2. So, there we go.
Yeah.
Jesse
listens to the show, at least.
It's one of his top three shows on the station as well. Yeah, very good. Well, you know, we'll see what happens there. I mean, who knows what happens with the courts or with the NFL these days on if there's anything that's going to happen with you. Frank seemed pretty confident that he wasn't going to have any football issues with what was going on.
Well, and Andy Reid was asked about that last week. I wish I could remember who by, but Andy Reid was asked about that, and whether it was conversations with the NFL about a potential suspension there, and he said no.
Yeah, I think Darren Smith asked the question, as I recall, I was sitting up there. But, yeah, it's, you know, so the good news for the Chiefs, right, if nothing happens from that, because, as we said, they need players there. They need players who can get back to the quarterback. They need to be able to get him on the ground. Let's talk a little bit more about that defense. We've seen, you know, we got a week or so of practice here. It is a younger defense with some new faces out there in many positions. Have you liked what you've seen so far? Let's start from the back forward in the new faces in the defensive backfield. Have you liked that stuff so far?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm sure I'm not the first person to bring this up, but Joshua Williams, a fourth-round pick, is certainly getting a lot of run at cornerback. And part of that is because Rashad Fenton's out. He still hasn't come back from his off-season shoulder surgery that they initially termed minor, so we thought we'd see him out here at some point. Maybe we still will see him out here at some point. But I actually think, you know, he's been even more impressive than McDuffie has been. You know, I mean, McDuffie has gone through, I think, a typical rookie learning curve out here. You know, I've seen him have some bright moments. I've also seen him get beat some. I've seen Joshua Williams get beat less frequently. And so Spagnuolo said last week that, when Fenton comes back, that spot's his.
Right.
And I kind of think Josh Williams might be playing him out of that conversation.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I wouldn't be sitting around in that tent because he looked pretty good to me.
I did see one video where Mecole Hardman kind of took it up and broke it off to the sideline. He lost him, but that's a nice move by – it's as good as see for Mecole Hardman. And if you want to look at one side or the other, he did get beat on that move, but I think that was more what Mecole Hardman did than what Joshua Williams didn't do on that play.
I did think it was interesting last week when he said, yeah, this is Rashad's job, but I'm like, it ain't nobody's job anywhere if someone can play.
Yeah,
I know Spags doesn't particularly like the kids sometimes to have those spots, but – I wouldn't feel super comfortable if I'm Rashad Fenton.
I wouldn't either. I mean, I think, you know, the question about Josh Williams has never been his talent. It's always been the talent he's been playing against.
Right.
Whether or not this leap is going to be too big for him. He's got the size. He's got the length. Actually, his body type reminds you a little bit of L'Jarius Sneed when he's out on the field.
Yeah.
But the question is, you know, can he defend basically plays and talent that he's never defended before? And I think they've gotten to the point where they threw him out there in OTAs, and he was one of a mixture of guys at that point. And you're kind of waiting on him to get beat. And so you throw him into training camp, and it's like, okay, well, he's still defending these guys. Well, now we've reached another step as of today, which is the pads are on. And so let's see how he does over this week. And he surprised us twice before. Maybe he'll surprise us again.
All right, Sam, the linebacking core, Anthony Hitchens is no longer there. I mean, rave reviews from everyone on Nick Bolton and kind of running the defense and getting things done. But the new face is Leo Chanel from Wisconsin. It's hard to tell because they don't really tackle people. I think you can watch cornerbacks and safeties to being in the right position a little bit more. But I'd like to see linebackers hit people and tackle them and do that. But it looks like he's going to be a sure tackler. That's his history. Is this someone who can be a contributor early for the Chiefs, or will he have to kind of just be a spot guy here and there?
Yeah, I think he's going to be more of a rotational piece. Now, I mean, we've got a long way, right, until September 11th, so things can certainly change. But, you know, I think if the Chiefs played a preseason game tomorrow, we'd see Bolton, Gay, and Elijah Lee, who's another really good story. I mean, he's a Blue Springs High School kid. Actually also went to St. Joe High School here. So used to go to training camp. In fact, he said he was a towel boy at Chiefs training camp. And, you know, he's a six-year guy that has never really gotten, you know, a full-time role as a starter. And, you know, right now he's getting a lot of run with the number one. So it looks like he's going to have an opportunity to show that he's a starter in the NFL. Now, obviously, that's the linebacker position that plays, you know, the fewest snaps for the Chiefs. You know, I think Nick Bolton – needs to be on the field on all three downs, and I think Willie Gay does too. And so it's who's that guy in your base defense. But right now, Elijah Lee's been getting the most snaps there.
Yeah, I think Chiefs fans will be happy as long as it's not the players who aren't on the Chiefs anymore who were there last year. I mean, that's just
well,
kind of
that would be unusual. Usually you can only use the guys on your roster, Todd.
Yeah, maybe so. I think Chiefs fans have seen enough of Anthony Hitchens, you know. He was fine. He was a nice leader and all that stuff, but it outlived his purpose here in Kansas City. You need some fresh blood, so it's good, I guess. I don't know. Sam McDowell is never going to outlive his purpose for us here on the program. We've got more with him next from St. Joseph right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. How many wide receivers have had at least four rushing touchdowns in a season? We knocked this around a little bit in the break.
Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. Do you know the answer to this question?
I actually did not hear the question.
How many wide receivers have had at least four rushing touchdowns in a single season?
Debo.
Debo is one. He had eight last year. That's the NFL record.
Has Tyreek done it?
Mm-mm. Three is his max.
My next guess was DeAnthony Thomas.
No.
He did not do it, Sam.
Was not that.
You picked a guy who was on a team that did not have a wide receiver score a touchdown.
I know, that's why. I think he ran for one, so I thought that was the way they did it. I think I remember him running for a touchdown. I don't know.
Well, the answer is actually three. Deebo Samuel is one. The other two, Tavon Austin in 2015 had four. Ray Renfro of the Cleveland Browns in 1953 had four. That's putting into some perspective what Deebo Samuel did last year and why he's a much richer man today than he was before.
Not good.
I would have guessed Ty Montgomery. Remember, he switched from receiver to running back, but still considered a receiver at the time. I'm kind of surprised he didn't get to four.
Well, let's blame the football reference data.
At least by Pro Football Reference's stathead, they do not listen.
I think Sam just found a glitch in your question, Curtis.
Let me see if I can find his name on this list. If I don't find his name on the list.
He might not have had four one year.
That's possible.
Yeah, maybe not. Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star is our guest, and I've heard more than one person up there at camp, Sam, say that, like, I've heard a couple of people drop that, like, Sky Moore is built, like, he's built like a running back. I mean, I've heard a couple of guys do it.
The legs.
Have you, do you think he's someone who could be the kind of player they would put in, like, a Deebo set or something like that? Have you heard any, you know, talk of things like, I don't think they're going to show things like that out there in front of the entire world, but is that a thought that he could maybe be a weapon in that way?
Well, those of us up here have actually had conversations about the fact that the Chiefs are going to have to get rid of a running back they like.
Right.
There's going to be a running back on that's not going to make the initial 53, who, you know, I think for the majority of last year probably would have made the initial 53. I mean, you think about the fact that Derek Gore got called up last year from the practice squad because he was the fourth running back. He's probably fifth now. So they've added depth at that position, and I think they're already concerned about getting those guys enough carries just in preseason games, let alone in actual games. And so I don't really see a reason to take away carries from guys you already think aren't getting the ball enough and getting into a rhythm.
Okay, yeah. I just, you know, you never know. With the league is such a copycat league, and you see some of these things going around. I just had never really heard anyone talk about Sky Moore as someone who looks like a running back until last week. I heard a couple of different guys kind of say that, players and someone else. It just struck out to me. What do you think you've seen so far from Sky as he's kind of acclimated himself to the professional spots here with the full squad out there?
Yeah, I think he's been better out here at camp than he was over the summer. Now, he missed part of the summer with a hamstring injury. But I think returned for just the last week of OTAs, and I've seen more from him at training camp. You know, he's a guy who I think maybe based on the school he was, you thought, you know, probably more of an impact in year two than year one, which maybe that still turned out to be the case. But I do think he's going to be an impactful player in year one. I do think you're going to see him, you know, play a handful of snaps every game, even if he's, you know, probably a clear fourth on the depth chart. I don't think he's going to be surpassing Hardman, Valdez, Scantling, or Juju Smith-Schuster on the depth chart any time during training camp. Of course, an injury could change things, but, you know, the Chiefs tend to play four wide receivers. It's not like he won't get run because he's the fourth on the depth chart. So I think he's going to have an opportunity, and like I said, I think I'm more optimistic on him making an impact than maybe I was based on what I saw over the summer.
Right, and that injury kind of did hamper him a little bit, and this is a big chance for him to come out there and show some stuff. So I mean, it's obviously someone who fans are going to sit there and watch, and I think another person who fans will watch at the wide receiver position this year, particularly in camp and in the regular season as well, is Mecole Hardman, who it's a contract year, and as you talked about last segment, contract years are not always undefeated. Sometimes, you know, they are, sometimes they aren't. What do you think of where Mecole Hardman is right now? Because I sit there and I watch him and I see some of the same things you would always see. A drop here, a drop there, but then making a couple of nice plays. Is he someone who you're confident that can make a real jump? Or have we seen what he is in the NFL and he's not someone who's going to jump up and be like a superstar type of talent?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you would define by jump. I think he'll have a better year probably than what we've seen in his first 3 years. But is he going to be this guy that's going to put up like Tyreek Hill-like numbers? I don't think so. It is Tyreek Hill's absence that leads me to believe more than anything I've actually seen out of Mecole Hardman that, you know, I think he's going to have a better year because, you know, I've mentioned this before, but it's not like they're going to be asking Mecole Hardman to do everything Tyreek Hill was doing. But if Mecole Hardman's on the roster last year, he's looking at other guys and saying, hey, I can do this that this guy can't do, or I can do this that this guy can't do. There wasn't a lot he could do that Tyreek Hill couldn't just raise his hand and said, yeah, well, I do that pretty well too. Now there's some things I think he does that without Tyreek Hill on the roster that he does that there's not a lot of other guys on this roster can do. So by that factor, I think he stands to benefit a lot from Tyreek Hill no longer being here. And there's more opportunity for him. And I think more opportunity will lead to better production overall.
When he made statements kind of along that line last week, or I guess it was on one of the NFL Network shows, and said, you know, I want people to know I can take the top off the defense too. Some fans kind of reacted to that from the mindset of he's a little too cocky or whatever for a guy who really hasn't quite lived up to what some people were hoping for, and that, you know, why don't you do something first before you make those statements? But I kind of think you need a little bit of that, don't you, to be successful at that position? I kind of like the fact that he said, hey, I can do that stuff too. Just give me the chance.
Yeah, and the other part about that is, you know, I'm going to be kind of careful about the way I phrase this because I think most receivers, and a very high percentage of receivers would do better in this system than any other system in the league. I don't know that Mecole Hardman last year could say that because as teams took away Tyreek Hill's ability to go deep, it's not like they're just shadowing Tyreek Hill when they do that. I mean, they're putting cover two, cover three, and cover four schemes out there. That just takes away the deep secondary period. And so, therefore, that took away Mecole Hardman's ability to impact on the deep ball as well. You know, he only caught four deep passes last year. So I think that if you've got guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, who, and really Sky Moore fits this too, that can work more of the underneath stuff, and suddenly teams have to account for that more, you could see, theoretically, some more plays from Tyreek Hill deeper in the secondary, or from Mecole Hardman deeper in the secondary.
Yeah, you got to make the catch when you get there too, and I think that's, you know, listen, Tyreek Hill had some drops last year.
That is an important piece of it.
That's I guess the most important part for wide receiver,
in
right?
It's in the name.
You could receiver. It is.
Wide runner.
It is important, and I've got a bit of a theory, Sam. You tell me if I think I'm crazy here, and I know you will. I think one of the things that has that has been the most important for the Chiefs over this really good stretch they're on with Patrick Mahomes and, you know, when Tyreek Hill was playing and all these, Travis Kelce, they've had a whole bunch of their best players who had some sort of a chip on their shoulder. You know, Patrick Mahomes was a three-star athlete who didn't get recruited by, you know, Texas to play quarterback. You know what I mean? Travis Kelce was just a dude who halfway played quarterback. Ohio State wasn't beating the door down for him and got kicked off of his college team. And even someone like Tyrann Mathieu, who was a really highly recruited player, got kicked out of his university, right, and had to be on his third team in the NFL. And Mecole Hardman was a huge five-star. Everybody wants you. You stay home. You go to Georgia, and you're out of school in 3 years, and you get picked in the second round. And I mean, I just don't think he has had that kind of, you know, chip on your shoulder bit that a lot of these guys had before. And I think the Chiefs did a really nice job with a whole bunch of guys who were driven by whatever it was, and they came together and they did this. And he doesn't quite seem to fit that mold for me. Like Curtis said when he's on TV, I mean, I could take the top. I can do these things, but he hasn't really done it yet. Is there something to that, you think, or am I way off base?
I mean, I think you're kind of getting to the psychology of it. I think every player is going to react to both of those possibilities differently. Tyrann Mathieu is a motivated guy by anything. I think we've seen some of that with Patrick Mahomes too, that something really small can provide him for motivation. I also think Patrick Mahomes is motivated if they had gone, you know, 20-0 last year. So I just think everybody's built differently in that facet. I haven't seen, like, evidence of McCole Hardman just flat out not caring enough or something like that. I know that's long been sort of an assumption by some people that, you know, maybe if McCole Hardman cared some more, he'd be out there producing more. I don't know that I see stuff like that or, you know, evidence that leads me to come to that conclusion. But it's hard to know without being around guys every day in the off season what makes them tick.
Yeah, for sure. I just I think they just had a really big amount of players who were kind of maybe overlooked at some point in their career, and they're really, really driven. I agree with you that Mahomes is driven all the time for whatever. But I think some of that may come from the fact that he's the best quarterback in football, and Mac Brown wanted him to play safety. You know what I mean?
You're still looking at his you still think he's looking at his rival's star ranking.
I mean, some of these guys do. I mean, you, like Colin Saunders would be like, you know, we're the no-star crew or whatever. I mean, recruiting's recruiting. It is what it is. And so, you know, people are right and wrong on a lot of these things. But I think the Chiefs had an inordinate number of people who were overlooked at some point and were their best players. And I think that's what kind of helped them be what they were, you know. But that's just my little theory I had with them for a little while. And Hardman doesn't quite fit in to that bit of it because it was a little different path for him to kind of get there. I don't know. Could be wrong. Could be right. I don't know. We'll see. All right, it's trading deadlines coming our way tomorrow. We got news just in. Frankie Montas going to the Yankees. They need help. You know, they just lost the Royals.
Time they finally
they
got
need something.
Some
We've
talent.
Seen this big trade between the Brewers and Padres where they're, you know, Hader's going that way and they're moving their closer back the other way and, you know, prospects and stuff like that. Do you get the feeling, you smelling anything out there that the Royals will make any more deals, or are they going to be what they're going to be at this point?
Well, I 2 weeks ago maybe, or I guess a week and a half ago, I was pretty certain that Whit Merrifield would be one of the guys that was traded. I guess I'm less sure now, and not just because it's within 24 hours of the deadline. I still think that's a possibility. If I am the Royals, I'm looking at the return that Josh Hader got and thinking, I wonder what Scott Barlow might bring in. I've long thought that the good relievers have about 3 years, and the great ones, you know, have about five or six. And therefore, if you've got a good one and you're not in contention, whether he's up or not, contract-wise, it's a good time to move on. And it's not because Scott Barlow doesn't help your team this year. It's not because you don't think Scott Barlow can help your team next year. It's purely because you're selling at the highest point you can sell. And it'd be great if he didn't have the week he had in New York, because the price would probably be higher, not just because he had a bad week, but because of where he had a bad week and who he had a bad week against, or the teams that are going to be in the postseason. So I still think I would look at that move. I know that they're listening on all their guys. So I don't know how active they are with pushing certain players, but you know, I think if you told me one player is going to be traded from the Royals over the next 24 hours, I'd probably tell you it'd be Whit Merrifield.
And do you think? Where do you stand on Whit, and what, like, should they have traded Whit 2 years ago? I mean, you can't look back and do that because he has not gotten better. He's probably on the downhill. I mean, what sort of haul could you get for Whit Merrifield at this point with what he is as a player?
Yeah, well, a few things to that. You know, I mean, the short answer is yes, they should have. But I think there's this misconception about why. You know, they did not trade him because they miscalculated when they were going to be competitive again. They thought they were going to be competitive this year. So that's the miscalculation that led them to make the wrong move to keep Whit Merrifield for all these years. But there has been another piece of it. I mean, you talk to some people, and it's I don't think that he would have drawn the haul that a lot of people think that he would have drawn. And as far as a return package, but they still would have gotten something for him. And that's something's more that they get now. Now that doesn't mean that nobody wants Whit Merrifield now. I mean, he's hit almost 300 in July. I think he's becoming closer to what the player he had been previously, and he's versatile. And so I think he provides protection, because it's not like you don't have injuries in August and September if you're a competitive team. If you've got a guy like Whit Merrifield that could play, you know, three, maybe four positions, you feel much better about, hey, if this guy goes down, we're covered by him. Or if this guy goes down, we're still covered by Whit Merrifield. So I still think he's got some value. But now I think all you can do is look at what the situation is at its present moment. And you can't trade Whit Merrifield 3 years ago. All you can do is trade him now. And I think it's not just a good baseball decision, because it is a good baseball decision. But I think the comments that Whit Merrifield made, that he would potentially get vaccinated, at least consider getting vaccinated for another team, is acknowledgement that he thinks the current clubhouse is a losing clubhouse. And I just don't think you can have that mindset in your clubhouse.
And unlike Andrew Benintendi, at least, Whit Merrifield has put some slug along with that batting average, making him maybe a little bit more an enticing prospect for teams in September. Because I thought Andrew Benintendi, the idea, just because he had a high on base, I mean, he'd had, at the time the trade was made, he'd had three extra base hits in his previous 26 games. So I did not think that that he was going to bring a huge haul. But, I mean, Whit's bat's come around, if you believe it's real. At least he's a guy who you think can play anywhere, can get on base, and maybe get you some doubles and triples along the line.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you on Benintendi, first of all. You know, he was the most consistent hitter the Royals had had to that point, and so I think there was this thought, well, your best hitter should get, you know, big-time prospects in return. But he doesn't hit for power at a position that a lot of guys do hit for power. Whit Merrifield's a little bit different because he plays second base. You know, you don't necessarily consider second baseman the power hitting position in your lineup, and therefore if you can get any, it's a little bit of a bonus. So you do look more at, you know, the OPS, the other elements of the OPS, which is how often does he get on base? You know, what does he do when he's on base? He's a good base runner. He still can steal bases. So I still think he's got enough ways to help teams win. And I also think he's just a really good fit, like I said, for contending teams. I think he does. I think he covers a lot of gaps.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening there. Sam McDowell is our guest. I wanted to ask you about this. Kind of happened Friday night, and I'm looking for some numbers on this. Austin Charles, who was the 20th pick the Royals drafted, shortstop, pitcher, 6'7", I mean, prospect for sure, high school. They went 17 college players and then three high school players at the end. I'm seeing $429,000 for the 20th pick. I had heard it might be even higher than that on Friday night. What do you know about this player, and what's this mean with for the Royals to be throwing that kind of dough around on someone who I think a lot of people maybe thought they wanted to take but weren't going to take because they didn't think he would sign?
Well, I've never seen him play. I did not go scout this player. But from a larger big picture sense, I think it's beneficial that the Royals have really in the Dayton Moore era been received – the allowance to invest heavily in prospects. And whether it was initially in the international market, which they were not doing before Dayton Moore was here, and obviously he persuaded ownership to do that. And I know that's going to be taken as me giving Dayton a lot of credit for that. But, you know, I mean, the previous guys weren't allowed to do that, and certainly that hurt their tenures in Kansas City. But, you know, they've invested more in the international market. And that's another example of a very similar sort of investment. A player that you think has potential that maybe you're giving more money than other teams would, and therefore you're signing him. I mean, I think a lot of people probably thought that kid would not be signable in that round, and the Royals threw more money at him because of it. So I'm all for investing. I mean, when you're talking the difference between on a Major League Baseball roster, a couple $100,000 or even $100,000, I know that's not peanuts to you and me, Todd, but that's peanuts to what the Royals are putting into their payroll on this year's Major League roster. We've seen where that got them. So I've always been a proponent of investing in prospects.
Yeah, and in the bonus pool, if you're taking, you know, almost $500,000 or whatever for the 20th round pick, that means you're really serious about the kid. And I think it was pretty surprising to a lot of people that he signed. So I think it is a good sign. He's out there. Maybe we'll never see him. I mean, 20th round kid, who knows? It's just one of those things, but it does show an investment in trying to get those things done, which is important for them, because it seemed to be off, you know, on, like you said, with Whit Merrifield, when they're going to contend. They seem to be off on, are you supposed to draft a bunch of high school guys or a bunch of college guys? They're not quite on what it's supposed to be sometimes. So hopefully things will work out. Are you confident? Before we let you go, Sam, we got 24 hours. Yes or no for more Royals trades?
Yeah, I would say there would be at least one.
All right, there we go. One. Would you like to see three or two?
I'd like to see four.
Trade them all, he says.
Why not four?
Why not four, exactly.
Unload them.
Yeah, unload them. Sam, thanks for your time today. Enjoy your work. We always enjoy reading, and I know you don't enjoy talking to me, but I enjoy talking to you whether you like it or not. And I can't wait to see you sometime next week up at camp. It's going to be thrilling for both of us, I'm sure.
Okay, keep me posted on what days you're going to be here because I do need a day off.
There you go. I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to show up,
man,
and you won't even know.
I'm going to be out that day. So bad.
I might need you to go find Steven and drive him to a chiropractor. He's laid
Steven
up in the stone. I know
Steven's
his back hurts good. Right now, so.
Good to see some A-10 representation, but, yeah, he's out here.
Yeah, he's up there hurting. You're our A-10 representation.
I'm your A-10 representation. I'm out here. Teicher's out here, too.
And Jesse Newell's out there,
yep.
too.
Jesse's out here, too.
We're covering it all.
Like a blanket.
Like a blanket.
A big red and gold blanket.
Like a blanket. Thank you, Sam. Enjoy the rest of your day, okay?
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, there's Sam McDowell from the Star up in St. Joe talking a little Chiefs and a little Royals, feeling like there could be a trade. What was another trade during that? Mancini?
Two trades have been made within the last hour. We've seen the Yankees getting Frankie Montas and closer Lou Trevino from the A's for four minor league players, three pitchers and an infielder, all four in the Yankees.
Do the Yankees have any other minor leaguers
in their top 30 prospects?
Is there any truth that the Surin is going to try out for the Rays while he's down there?
Because
I thought I saw something about that.
Yeah, he's a center fielder.
The 5th, 10th, 20th, and 21st best prospects in the Yankee system going to the A's for Montas and Lou Trevino. Not Lee Trevino, but Lou Trevino, who can join Jose Trevino. And the Orioles have sent outfielder Trey Mancini to Houston. But I didn't see who exactly it was.
So the
for.
Orioles
so
are selling now?
Orioles are selling. He was seen hugging players on the field as he left to head to Houston.
Are the Brewers selling? They're in first place. Is this a seller? What did they do? I don't know what
that
was.
They upgraded.
And the Padres are in the playoffs, and they upgraded.
The Padres upgraded.
And the Brewers, but they're in for that trade's a weird one.
It is weird.
It's a weird one. We'll get into that
really
one.
There really isn't any, that I can think of, any accurate precedent for what happened between those two teams.
We will check in with the Brewers on the drill next hour and find out exactly how that one landed there. You're listening to the program here on a Monday. Wrapping up this 3 o'clock hour here, we will keep our eyeballs on the trade deadline. Not another Royals trade yet.
Nope.
But they did acquire someone for cash. Anthony Misevich, who's a pitcher.
Are you sure it's Misevich?
Well, that's what we discussed during the break. That's what we're calling it.
Yes.
We'll see how the interns say it during SportsCenter. It could be anything.
There was some debate.
Some debate. Not a big trade. The other trades are happening.
No.
I think the Yankees probably are not part of any Juan Soto mix now that they've traded away seven prospects.
And they haven't unloaded any of their top guys, like the top.
But it was a lot for this Montas thing.
But according to one list, but the guys the people did not want them to let go of. They have not let go of them, and
Maybe they're still in then. They didn't beat the Royals yesterday. We know that. Program continues with the drill next.
All right, how many Colorado Buffaloes are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Brought to you by Good Sense.